guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Say that more slowly because I'm stupid.
Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Here we are in Game 7. It is what it is. We're at home. We play well there. We've played very well in that building against in this series. We had a tough start the other night, but for the most part, I think we play well there. And our guys should be confident. They've been there and done it, most of them. I think the younger kids are handling it well. So I'm sure they'll be amped up to play too. So should be a good hockey game. I don't think we're going to overthink this one or the previous one at home. We didn't play well enough in the first period the other night. Tonight, I thought we played better from start to finish. Didn't go our way, so we got to make sure we do the things that are necessary in Game 7.
They've been a much better home team under Bruce Cassidy than Claude Julien, much. And they've pretty much answered the bell every time this year. So if you want to put stock in those things, you should feel good tomorrow. There's reasons to feel good. There are. I wish I shared them with you. I wish I felt as confident as some of y'all. So, right to it, as promised. Tim in San Antonio wants to weigh in on the Bees. Go ahead, Tim.
What's going on? I think the fatal flaw that the Bruins had was it's all about timing at this point. They never had a cold snap January, February, even March. They got lucky winning games from behind and things till the last couple weeks of the season once they aired that commercial featuring you, Felger. Huh. And once they did that, the juju changed, and everything has started to go downhill since. So that's my take on it. Bad juju by the organization.
Well, when they did do that commercial, take me out of it. It's like, isn't it a little early to be tooting your horn, fellas? Like,
this is what I think the big issue with the team is. There's too many young guys.
Don't you want to get into the second round? I mean, don't you want to win something before you start,
It did feel maybe a little premature. Sure.
Too young.
I don't know. I feel better about that if you had won a couple rounds, right there. You would hate to do that and blow a 3-1 series lead and barf on yourself in Game 7 at home after acting like you'd arrived. I mean, but I don't think that has anything to do with it. I think you throw that all out the window.
Too young.
Whether you had collapses or dry spells or not at this stage, what does it have to do with tomorrow night?
Nothing. It doesn't.
Nothing.
No, and honestly, I'm not going to insult them by saying they got lucky in March. I think their formula all year was pretty consistent. They were relentless. They were deep and they were relentless. The problem when you get into the playoffs, especially against a team like Toronto, Toronto's forward group is deep. And now they're playing relentlessly. They're fast and coming at you all the time. So now all of a sudden people are matching your intensity and do you have another gear? And I just don't know if they do.
Ernie in Watertown. Hi, Ernie.
Hi, Mike. I agree with Tony earlier. They should play Donato tomorrow night. You mentioned something about... they didn't like him in this playoffs, but the way I look at it, Mike, nobody else is doing anything. Or I should say the only other player that's doing anything is DeBrusk. Skating, shooting, grinding. So I just want to get your thoughts on that. Thanks for taking my call.
I mean, I agree on DeBrusk. He's showing me something, for sure. These are big boy games, too, in situations, and he's fighting off checks and winning battles and all that, creating opportunities. DeBrusk has been impressive. The thing with Donato, I came to grips with the fact that he wasn't in the lineup. Especially after Game 4 when they went up there in Toronto and Wingles played and Wingles and the team blocked a million shots and they sort of ground out a victory. I said, okay, if you're going to grind it out, this is the way it's going to be and you want to put Wingles on the fourth line and said, Donato, that makes sense. He did his job as a fourth liner, grinder down there, so fine. Okay, I come to grips with it. Tommy Wingles on the second line with David Krejci? No. Sorry. No. Nope. That to me makes no sense. I don't mind them moving down Rick Nash. I think he deserved a little wake-up call, and also he gets to play on the left side, which he's better suited to, so fine. I think they got more out of Rick Nash last night with that move, but Tommy Wingles does not belong up there.
I want him in there. I mean, Donato. I want Donato in there. And you know what? I don't want to take DeBrusk off that second line. I'd go back to the way it was and put him on the third. Donato on the third line with Nash and Backes. See how it goes. You can always change in the middle of the game if you need to change. But to me, start there. I don't see it with Heinen. I don't. And I thought he was useless in the first five games of the series. So you know what? I want someone in there that can shoot the puck and at the very least might be able to give him something on the power play.
Jeff in Long Island, hi.
Hey, so real quick, I just want to thank you guys for keeping me sane while I moved to this stupid state. But I want to talk about Charlie McAvoy real quick. So I can't remember what game it was. It was either 3 or 4, but he got in a tussle in front of the net and I forget who it was with, but basically Yeah.
Okay, he doesn't look like the same guy. Let me finish the statement for you.
He's not. I mean, you, every once in a while you see him carry the puck a little bit, and you'll say, okay, maybe there's a little of it.
He did it a couple times last night, couple.
But he's still not attacking like he was before, and he's certainly not carrying the puck as deep as he was before. And I don't think he's right. I don't think there's any question he's not right.
John and Alston, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, McAvoy's skating, I think, has been not great, but he also has been making some bad decisions. There was a time, I think it was the second period, where he stepped up at the blue line to finish a check, and he left, I think it was a mini two-on-one, and Chara had to bail him out, but I saw that right away. My main point was on the linesmen, who I think are calling a terrible series. Not the officiating. The officiating's been kind of both ways, but the linesmen have been horrible. They've kicked Bergeron out 17 times, I heard today, in six games, and he's been taking draws like this all year long, and all of a sudden they're going to change the rules. Maybe he's been cheating all year, but they're changing the rules at the start. It's got to be tough on him. And then the offsides calls. There was one, I think McQuaid kept the puck in last night, and I'm not excusing the loss. They lost. They should have. But there was the offsides call on McQuaid and the offsides call on Marchand that he was heated about. And I think the lines have been terrible. Just want to hear your thoughts.
Maybe. I don't know. I think they've been. I think the officiating's been a total non-factor. I think you got a huge gift from the refs last night, a gift like you read about, where Backes elbows Anderson square in the face. And even though it's intentional, that's a penalty. You have to call that. So he elbows Anderson square in the face, and then he draws that maple leaf. I can't remember who
Polak,
it was.
Polak, I think, was it?
Bowen Polak. So they get into it, and it was obviously, should have been two each for roughing, and then an extra two to Backes for goalie interference or elbowing or whatever they were going to call there. And that's it. I mean, that was so blatant. And they squared it off 2-2. I'm like, Dad, what a gift.
That blew my mind.
And Babcock got into the ref for it, as he should have, and the ref made it up with that Charlie McAvoy trip, which was ticky-tack, to say the least.
Yeah, I thought that was weak.
Or they made it up later when they pulled Rask and then ended up calling that interference that everyone was bitching about at the end of the game.
I think Backes sold that.
Yeah, I do too. I was fine with that. Like, everybody calmed
exactly
down.
Exactly.
As tight as they were in that third period anyway, did they even deserve to get a goal at that point?
Exactly. All the nets you missed, all the stupid dingle-dangle, you know, passes, turnovers, all the times they wouldn't shoot, all the crap they did last night. You're going to talk about the linesmen? Or the refs? Would you please? Come on. We're not Celtics fans. We don't do that here. Larry in Duxbury. Go ahead, Larry.
Hi, guys. I think the key is really the big difference between when the Bruins score first early in the first period and the mindset of the team versus falling behind or if Tuukka gives up an easy goal. And it's just, well, we know that we can come back, but it doesn't always work out, and they don't play that way. And I think at home, that's really the key. The first two games, when they were scoring early, it changed the whole mindset of the crowd and the team.
So this is a good point, Larry. Is all the comebacks that the Bruins had in the regular season, does it give them a false sense of security here? Like, we can win this way?
Maybe. I mean, or got them into bad habits, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Look, I think there's some truth to that. They scored the first goal last night, though. And
well,
you know,
this is true. Yeah.
Right? It was the first time in the series that...
But again, the tying goal that they gave up was so atrocious on so many levels. From the goalie on out.
I mean, what was it, 45 seconds later?
35 seconds. On a nothing play. Nothing. So, I mean, you're right. They did score first last night, so maybe I'm talking about something different. But I just thought that first goal that they allowed after going up 35 seconds, you're 1-0. It was a lucky goal, too. It was through a screen. You know, Anderson would have had it if he saw it, but you get one there. You finally get one by him. The building's silent. Which way is this going to go? And, Rask blows a simple clearing. He and Chara got mixed up. Maybe it was Chara's fault. Maybe it was Rask's. Either way, Rask turned it over into the corner. It comes to the point for just a nothing shot. Nothing shot. Horrible rebound allowed by Rask. The coverage, I think it was Rick Nash, left Nylander all alone there on that post. Like, that was just a giveaway goal. That's not like you got beat by a superior player, elite talent, or that was just a total mental lapse, like a total give up at a crucial moment. And that's one where you look at it and you go, is this team any different, Murray? Is this GD team any different?
I thought, but it doesn't feel that way, really.
Because that was garbage. That was a garbage goal.
See, it's another reason, though, I worry about Game 7 in this building. Because if you give up the first goal, oh, man, you're going to be able to feel it. You are going to be able to feel it. They're going to feel it. Like, and that...
I mean, part of me wished it was there. I really do. Like, I'm with Maz. If they're down 1-0, the tightness you're going to feel in this building, you're going to feel it emanating through your television.
The tight bootay syndrome. It's coming. It's here. We're right now clenched between the Bruins' butt cheeks. They are squeezed so tight. Joe and Rosendale. Go, Joe.
Falga, you know what I think about this guy?
Which guy?
Mayor Poop. You know, Mayor Poop City, Tuukka Rask. It's going to be, we're going to go to Club Diarrhea tomorrow night, and Tuukka Rask is DJing, okay? This team got too hot too soon, and then now they're hitting a slump. They're playing scared out there. Tuukka, you can see it. He's just, you got to get the Pepto-Bismol for him, because tomorrow night, it's going to be leaking down his legs, boys.
Club Diarrhea and Tuukka's DJing.
So can I just ask, what does that mean, you got too hot too soon? Like, is that a criticism or is that just a statement of fact?
There's nothing they can do about it, but they did peak too early. I mean, like, it's not, I'm saying they should have lost, but, I mean, you could feel it. Like, they weren't that good.
So, but to me, it's not about peaking too early. It's more about not elevating when you need to elevate. Like, that to me is the alarming part. Go back to the game at the end of the regular season. There's an opportunity there. They didn't elevate. And there are opportunities here in games 5 and 6. And in game 5, they weren't, you know, they didn't come out and elevate. Like, to me, that's what is alarming. So you can say you're early on. Sure, absolutely. No question they were playing great in the regular season. It surprised all of us. But if they lost more games then and they still had the opportunity to elevate now, would they? I don't know. Like, I'm not sure.
Well, no, based on past results, it's hard to say.
I'm just not sure it's related to the regular season. That's all. Like, you know, for them, they should dread Toronto getting the first goal tomorrow night, because this building will groan. It will groan if that happens.
We continue with your thoughts on Bruins Leafs, plus the latest on the Palace Q right after this.
Tugger Mass, the Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass.
I'm a sports dork now.
That guy is a hack.
Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's a Palace Q.
A mutiny, a Q.
Nothing's been solved, and it's just getting worse by the day, according to Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio.
A mutiny, a Q.
I don't know how they find a way out of this mess. Tom Brady has had enough of the Patriot way. It feels philosophical, and I don't think Bill Belichick's going to bend. I don't know what Brady wants, and I don't know how he gets it from a guy like Belichick.
Florio also thinks Brady's going to retire, and Belichick's going to trade for Nick Foles.
A mutiny, a Q.
Brady pulls a Barry Sanders and walks away, and wouldn't it be hilarious if the Patriots are the team that makes the play for Nick Foles via trade?
Jim Rome thinks it's going to too, and it's all Belichick's fault.
A mutiny, a Q.
Two of his best players who don't want to play. The old man is the reason for that. The old man better look in the mirror and readjust his approach and thinking about the so-called Patriot way.
Even that creepy weirdo Jim Gray doesn't have any answers on Brady's future.
A mutiny, a Q.
You've known Tom Brady a long time.
Yeah.
Okay. Think he's retiring? Are you getting that feeling?
I have no idea. Coach Belichick will make that decision.
It's a Palace Q.
A mutiny, a Q. Who's the Patriot? A coup.
So it continues. Nothing from the principals, it doesn't feel like. Just more chatter out there, more opinion making. I'll give you two more opinions, because this is like, whether you think it's really going to end up in divorce or not, to me is beside the point. Like, for example, I mean, I think Brady's coming back and playing here. I'm sure of it. And if I had to bet, Gronkowski's coming back and playing. I think he wouldn't mind being traded. I think Saturday showed you that he's okay playing somewhere else. And I think Saturday showed you he's okay pissing off Belichick. I don't think he cares about that anymore. But if they make it worth his while, he'll come back and play. And I think that's what probably will happen. But that doesn't mean these issues aren't real, right? Like, just because they're going to come back and be in uniform next year, there's a real divide between these players and the coach. And there's a real divide in terms of how they want to prepare. And there's, like, these issues are real. So they'll be back, and the division still sucks, and you'll win a bunch of games. But I don't know how you can be as good as you would normally have been or have been with all this stuff in the middle of it. So here's a couple pieces of sound. Mike Lombardi does a podcast.
Just quickly, you won't be. And where it's going to hurt them is whenever they encounter some level of adversity, there are already going to be cracks there. So that's when it'll show up. But keep going.
No, I think you're right. I think that's a good point. Mike Lombardi does a podcast on The Ringer. He had this to say about the Rob Gronkowski situation.
I think people are confusing this thing so dramatically. I mean, like, they're saying, well, Gronk's mad at Belichick, Gronk's... No, this is about money.
Mm-hmm.
It's about money. It's about he wants another contract. I mean, there was a time where Gronk... Every year, Gronk wants another contract. I mean, there was a time when at the combine, Drew Rosenhaus had typed a letter. He wants a new contract, and he forgot that the rules state you have to wait 12 months before you can do a new contract. That's how much he's always trying to. And in fairness to Rosenhaus and in fairness to Gronk, it's hard to officiate Gronk and it's hard to pay Gronk. Because, I mean, let's face it. If we were just over in Siena sitting in the square and we were doing a fantasy draft, mm-hmm. we would pick Gronk over Sammy Watkins, who's making $16 million, right? We would pick Gronk over most offensive players. So he's hard to do a contract for. This is about money. It's green. It's money.
Okay. Does that make you feel better or worse? I mean, better.
Yeah, better if it strictly is about money. But do you believe that it is strictly about money? Because I don't.
Well, I mean, I think it's combined. I think he's less happy here than he used to be. I think Tom Curran's reporting about not having a good time here and almost hanging up. And I think all those things are real. I think those things are really real. So I think it's also he's changed a little bit. He's not as willing to put up with the demands here as he once was. He'll do it, but he's just less. He's just less cohesive, less copacetic towards it. But I mean, let's say it's mostly money. You think the Pats are going to pay him now?
No.
After all this carrying on?
No.
See, I still think there's a chance they do pay Gronk. I do. I think with Gronk, there's a shot. Because I look at it and say, he's underpaid. They know he's underpaid. They sweetened the deal for him last year. They could completely do the same thing and say, this has nothing to do with what he said. We did it a year ago. I mean, they could totally justify it that way.
Yeah, and to keep Brady happy. But if he keeps going on like this, if you're the Krafts, why would you redo this
deal? I'll tell you, I mean, I said this to you the other day. I would be more inclined to redo, you know, give Gronk more than Brady more. I totally would. Like, I look at that and say, that at this stage with Brady, like, no, you got your gift, pal. You got it. You wanted the quarterback gone, and we got rid of him. So shut up. You're not getting something else, too. But Gronk, what has Gronk gotten that? The money thing, I'm with Gronk on. He deserves the money. I don't like the way he's done it. But he deserves more money.
Stu, you got another Lombardi cut there?
Well, look, you know, it's a voluntary workout. I'm sure he's talking about he's going to be in good shape. I mean, mm-hmm. Gronk works out. Gronk's always in good shape. The same thing with Brady. I mean, just because they're not at there doesn't mean they're not going to play. I think, you know, Brady, if he wasn't going to play, he owes it to the Patriots to let them know fairly quickly that he wasn't going to play, because as we enter draft week, you know, this is the time where you need to know what's going on. I'm very confident both players will play. And I think, to me, the only thing would concern me about Gronk is if he doesn't have a great offseason, those injuries tend to creep up a little bit. And guys that don't really spend the offseason working, and I'm sure maybe he is, but you always worry about that injury.
Okay, so they're going to play. I agree, they're going to play. But when we celebrate the fact when they're the first ones in and working hard, don't we have to be concerned over the fact they're not even there to begin with? Like, you have to be consistent. Whenever Tom Brady's the first one in the door, the day one of the offseason program, we say, look at this, setting tone, the way he works, permeates the whole roster, that's why they're the Patriots. Well, now Brady's holding out, essentially. Doesn't that then have a negative effect? You can't have it both ways, right? So it's,
yeah.
I think it's absolutely germane to how good of a team they can be and ultimately what they can accomplish. And I think Maz is right. If they're winning and just steamrolling people, then I guess you're not going to see it. You're not going to see it till you do. And then when you do, what sort of foundation do they have to work through the adversity?
I mean, can you imagine if they have like a 4th-and-2 situation this year? After the whole Butler thing and after all the fighting about Guerrero and, you know, Gronk doing the motocross act, all of that, the first thing you're going to see is an eye roll from some of the players. It's going to be Seattle all over again. You know, looking back on the mistake they made against the Patriots in the Super Bowl and how that thing disintegrated. Heaven forbid Belichick makes some other coaching decision that bites him in the ass.
And on the other side, too, yes, they'll be back and they're going to play. But if you're Belichick, aren't you pissed at all this? I mean, the whole thing is to ignore the noise. The whole thing is do your job and ignore the noise. Well, they're not showing up from work, and they're creating a hell of a lot of noise. The two things. Bill asked you to do two damn things. Do your job and keep your effing mouth shut. Ignore the noise. Instead, they aren't showing up for work, and they're creating a ton of noise. So he's got to be pissed at all this stuff. And so what if those guys start to falter? Isn't Bill more likely to, I don't know, it just doesn't feel like it's a very good relationship, and there's really openings for problems there if things go wrong.
Yeah, it's not a good relationship. And whether or not, again, I don't know that it'll ever be totally rectified. That's the thing. Even if these guys show up, and they will, they'll be in camp. Even if something goes wrong in camp, I don't rule out Belichick throwing his hands up and saying, that's it, Gronk's out of here, and trading him in camp. I look, it's unlikely.
Now we're back to another thing. The Crafts won't let him.
Okay, I think it's unlikely, but if he were to do it, I don't think he's going to do it way, you know, a long time before the season starts. I think he'll
Why?
Do because it'll piss off Brady. It'll piss off Brady.
So you do it right before the season so he can't walk or he can't do something drastic.
Exactly. Otherwise, you know, Brady gets even more enraged and then maybe Brady does something stupid. So you wait. Get Brady back on board. Get him in. And then you want to trade Gronk, they trade him late. I could see that happening. Absolutely.
And I could also see Bill walking because if he tries to trade Gronk at the last moment, like Tony's saying, I still don't think the Crafts are going to allow it. Like in any other circumstance. He'd clean house. He would fix this by moving all these guys or just, you know, resetting the whole thing. You don't want to be here, you're cut, or we're going to trade you. But with these two players, it's never going to be allowed by ownership.
He's such a bad loser, Belichick is. He really is. He's a bad loser. He always has been. And, you know, I know that old line, show me a good loser and I'll show you a loser. But there is some, you know, anybody that gets what they want over his wishes gets screwed.
Oh, no, he holds a grudge.
There's no two ways about it. Mankin's got a big deal. Ultimately, he got screwed.
No, I'm not even. I just look at. There's people with the Jets from 20 years ago. He spit on, you know, if you saw him. Like, they just. He holds on to this stuff.
Yeah, there's no question. It just. He really is. He's a horrible loser.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
We start with Adam Schefter and news on a six-round draft pick. Adam, what can you tell us?
Well, Wendy, last week there were people who said that they did not know for sure that Tom Brady would return for the 2018 season. That was the expectation, but there were still people who questioned whether he actually would. Well, today, Don Yee, Tom Brady's agent, went on the record to say that Tom Brady does intend to return for the 2018 season. Again, not a huge surprise in any way, shape, or form, and we don't want to make it out to be something that it's not. But this is a case where I can tell you for a fact that last week there were people openly wondering if, in fact, Brady would be back. And one source even estimated last week when he said that there was a, quote-unquote, 75% chance that Brady would be back, meaning a 25% chance he wouldn't. But today, Don Yee dispelled any questions that anyone had, and I can tell you some people had some of those questions, that Tom Brady would be back, said it's his intent to return for the 2018 season in a week in which the Patriots very well could be involved in the quarterbacks in this draft. Double ones, double twos, could take a quarterback, expected to take a quarterback somewhere high. Don Yee also said that Tom Brady has thought about his contract, which pays him considerably less than Jimmy Garoppolo, his former understudy, is making in San Francisco. So this is, again, an issue that doesn't seem like it's going away anytime soon. But Don Yee says today that Tom Brady is expected and does intend to return for the 2018 season.
How you doing, Mike? I hope you weren't eating any romaine there. But you know, the two you say are off the reservation, Brady and Gronkowski. You know, they're the two to come back from the injuries. Brady with his hand was a little bit worse than everybody thought, and Gronk from the concussion. And then I think they think Bill threw that Super Bowl away or didn't coach it right, you know, with Malcolm on the sideline. Maybe this is their way of having, like, the jersey that Big Jim wears, Bill Blue Super Bowl 52.
You know? They're definitely wearing that shirt proudly. I'm sure Brady and Gronkowski saw you wear that shirt on here and were jealous.
I never wore it. I held it up. Prank call. The jersey doesn't exist.
I'll take it if you don't want it, Jim.
Apparently some people weren't happy with that jersey.
Yeah.
That was brilliant. But anyway, again, not the root of the problem, but something that Belichick is being hit over the head with by his players, especially those who are unhappy with him to begin with.
Just real quick, coming back, that Schefter sign you played, I hadn't heard that. And he's talking about Don Yee's comments made yesterday. Is Brady pissed about the contract that Jimmy Garoppolo got in San Francisco?
I'm telling you, this
like hearing that just as much of a Brady honk as I am, that annoys the hell out of me.
Why?
That's got nothing to do with him now. That's a deal he got in San Francisco. He's gone. He was a thorn in your side. He's no longer here. You shouldn't be worried about the money that he's making. Again, I refuse to believe that a new deal that Tom Brady's looking for has anything to do with money. It's about getting Alex Guerrero back in the fold so he can travel with the team and have his office right in a convenient spot where he can go and not have to go up to TB12. He's worried about Garoppolo's money? Get over it.
I bet you it did bug him, Murray, though.
Oh, wah.
I bet you
he's gone. That's the important thing. You wanted him gone. He's gone. Get over it.
So again, Kirk Cousins' contract probably doesn't bug him, but Garoppolo's does. You know, he wanted my job, and now he's making more money than me.
That's annoying to hear.
First of all, I think it's consistent, but I'm with you from the standpoint of shut up. They traded his ass for you.
So even
and
when
now, and now because he got somewhere else and got paid, which you knew he would, you're mad about that too?
I mean, the market dictates the value for quarterbacks. You knew he was going to get the money. So is he going to be single white female with this kid the rest of his life when he retires? That really annoyed me to hear.
John in Worcester on the Bruins. Hi, John.
I think that Brad Marchand could play better, and I feel like if he does play better, because if you go back to 2011, Game 7 against the Habs in the first round, then Game 7 in Vancouver, he had a couple points, and I feel like the team just feeds off of his play because he's not the most talented guy. He knows that, and he knows that he plays chippy hockey, and they need to be more aggressive.
Okay, so hold on. You thought Marchand was better last night?
No. No, I think he needs to step his game up.
Okay, thank you. Marchand was hot garbage last night. Are you kidding me?
I think he's been hot garbage for a few games now. I mean, you know, he's had a couple of shots here and there. He had a couple of opportunities last night.
I mean, he's some bad luck. He beat Anderson 5-hole in the first period and just trickled wide. So he got a little bad luck there. But the second goal is on Marchand. And Rask took a bad angle. He could have used a save there. But Marchand, that was an easy clear off the backhand. He just lets it go right underneath the stick. That was a huge play in the game.
And he whiffed. Turning over the puck. He's tight. And, you know, I agree with the caller. Yeah, the team feeds off him. That also goes the other way. I mentioned the play earlier. I thought it was so indicative of their whole night, especially the third period. He gets whistled for an offsides, and he slams his stick out of frustration. I get it. You know, sometimes calls are going to go your way. But that, I was like, oh, God, really? They're not winning this game. You could see how tight they were with that one little that thing that happened with Marchand there.
It's their frustration, and this is it. This is what we've seen from the team. It's not that they don't care. It's not that they're not trying. It's not that they're not stepping up. It's just the opposite. They're too wound. They're too tight. That's it. That's the condition. And now the opposing goalie's climbed inside their head. And you add those two things up, and oof. We've seen it before, Murray. And, you know, Tuca wasn't the problem last night. He's not the story. But is Freddie Anderson the story? Yep. So once again, the other goalie's the story. The other goalie's climbed inside of your head. And I don't think the other team is looking at Tuca Rask saying, ooh, how are we going to figure him out? But that's what you're doing with the other guy. That's what you're doing with the other guy. And that's happened a lot. That's happened a lot with this team. Sam in the car. Go ahead, Sam.
Hey, guys. Great show. I want to start out by saying those guys look like the Keystone Cops last night, for God's sakes. But I agree with Tony. Heinen should have been sitting two or three games ago. The guy has done 0.0. I mean, I'm not sure which game it was that he had two golden opportunities. One, he was couldn't have been more than 6 feet from the net. He takes a humongous shot, misses the net by 4 feet, and then gets another opportunity, point-blank range, and he fans on the shot altogether. Time for this kid to sit down.
Okay, so he sat last night, which isn't the issue. And it's not even that Wingles comes in. It's that Wingles is getting second-line time with David Krejci. He's not right. A second-line player. Sorry, that's just not the case. And we've heard Cassidy's, you know, day-of comments here a couple times about Donato. They scare you, Maz, don't they?
They do scare me because he says about Heinen, look, there are a bunch of guys here that we've come back in every situation this year and we've responded, and there are a bunch of guys that have been there for that, and Heinen's one of them. And when he says it that way, I think, oh, God, he's going to go to Heinen. Now, look, maybe he's playing coy. Maybe he's not going to tip his hand. And then all of a sudden the game starts and Donato's out there on the ice, okay, but in pregame warm-up. Like, I rule out nothing, okay? But when he says it that way, he doesn't strike me as a guy to BS. I don't think he has to this point. I mean, you know, someone could probably find me an example of where he's played a game and a guy's actually been on the ice when we didn't think he was going to be. But I feel like for the most part, he's shot pretty straight.
Tommy Wingles on the second line. We'll see what Cassie, I keep doing that. We'll see what Cassie comes up with in Game 7. Adam in Maine on the Patriots. Hi, Adam.
Hi, I was just calling to talk about Tom Brady's contract. Thank you. That'd probably be a good sign and trade for him to go to 49ers for Garoppolo.
Okay, I'm going to let you go on that. I mean, I'm willing to get stupid and go down any rabbit hole, but I'm not.
So
I'm just not up for that, Alan.
Let me clue in that small segment of Patriots fans that are still trying to pull that. Okay, you blew it. You blew it. You had him here and you traded him away. You're not getting him back now. It's over. You blew it. So enough. Good God, you're not getting him back. You blew it.
It's really a take that's worth laughing over, Maz, not getting mad at.
Oh, my God, it pisses me off. It's like, because you know how I feel about this. I've been saying this a long time ago. Then, but they got Brady. Brady's got 5 more years. Then all of a sudden Garoppolo goes out there, and now there's this turmoil, and, geez, we should have kept Garoppolo. No kidding. No, geez, light dawns over Marblehead. No kidding.
This is Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Felger and Maz.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5, the Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
Krejci wins it. Right circle. Fired. They score! Jake DeBrusk, who's able to wrist one by Freddie Anderson. 1-0 Bruins. Rast the save. Rebound. They score. William Nylander coming late. Far side. No chance for Rask as this puck squirted to the far wall. One apiece. Bruins turn it over. Over the line, far side. Now Matthews. Left of the net, Matthews. Back of the net. Rolls it out in front. They score.
Rask thought he got interfered with by Connor Brown. He actually took the stick out of Rask's hands with the skates in the crease. And this is being looked at by the Bruins.
After video review, the call on the ice has been reversed. We have goalie interference. No goal.
Backhand, they score. Mitch Marner leads with a 2-1 lead over the Bruins. Krug fakes right circle. McAvoy, rink wide, fired, and Anderson slid across with a blocker.
Looking for Rask to come out if they can, if they get possession in the offensive zone.
Snapped in by Marchand. Off goes Rask for the extra attacker. And Marlowe.
How to attack him. Oh, that's interference.
Plekanec on the line left side, fires, they score. As Backes got drilled out at center ice.
Patrick Marlowe just took out Backes. Backes was about to make the play.
And the Leafs score into the empty net. The call will not be made. And the Leafs with a 3-1 lead over the Bruins with 1:14 remaining in regulation.
You know, tight game like today, you know. Just got to have, you know, a team who takes care of the detail better, I guess, going to win the game. So we have to be strong.
I think their goalie's been real good the last two games. It's been tough to get anything by him, and you got to get in his face. And the ones he's seen, he's doing a good job stopping.
We had a good regular season. We want to have a good playoff. So now we've got to go to Boston, get the clam chowder like I talked about, and then got to dig in and win a game.
Okay, Sarat and Beers on the call last night here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. They'll have the call tomorrow night. Another Game 7. Another playoff series where the Bruins just have not been able to close. Another Game 7 at home against a team they should beat. Another one. How many of these we've had over the years? How many of these have you had over the years? And you've closed out very few of them, frankly. If you want to take out the Stanley Cup year, the miracle, magical Tim Thomas Stanley Cup year, you've lost in this spot most every time. You've lost in this spot most every damn time. One of the few times you broke through was against this Leafs team 5 years ago. And that was a miracle of miracles. You didn't step up big in that game either. You just pulled it out late against a group of people that are perhaps even bigger choking pigs than you are. And that's the Toronto Maple Leafs. So if you have any solace going into tomorrow night that maybe you're facing a bigger loser franchise than you are, and
they're going to screen fans coming in here tomorrow to make sure they can give the Heimlich. Because between the two teams, it's like really going to have 40 guys out there gagging.
I mean, it's again, Matt Doloff had the stat. You take out the Stanley Cup year, and the Bruins are 1-5 in Game 7s since 2008.
Boy, that is scary.
I mean, woof. Woof. They're 3-4 on home ice, and again, take out 11, and you have only one, and that was the miracle comeback against Toronto. So just yikes. So we played to the highlights here last night. You wanted to hit on the empty net goal by Plekanec there?
Yeah, so look, you heard Beer say it, and you know, they talked about it on the TV broadcast too, that Backes got interfered with, and he did. No two ways about it. But if you expect to get that call when you are desperate and have an empty net, then you're delusional. There's no way in hell you are going to get that call when you have an empty net and trying to tie the game. And I would caution fans now, going into Game 7, there have been a lot of penalties called in the three games in Boston. I wouldn't hold my breath on that happening tomorrow night. I mean, do you think really the officials are going to get in the way on Game 7? They're going to swallow the whistles. Unless it's anything egregious, it's not going to get called. There's going to be minimal special teams in the game in all probability. I'd still like to see Donato in the game. But nonetheless, minimal special teams. You're going to have to beat them 5-on-5. You're going to have to do that to advance.
Okay, we continue with your thoughts here. We're at the Garden. You want to weigh in on the Celtics heading into Game 5 tonight against the Bucks? By all means, we'll start taking more of your Celtics. We'll take your Celtics action whenever you want it. But your thoughts on that series, the stakes in that series, your thoughts on tonight's game, and the probable return of Marcus Smart. All on the table. You want to join us on that? By all means, you're welcome. Dave in Bridgewater, though, on the Bees. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, hey, so, you know, to be honest with you, I mean, I can't get over the fact that we're still letting Rask play. Not just the series, not just...
Come on,
you
would bench him for Hudobin tomorrow night?
No. That would be shameful, absolutely. But I'm just saying that, you know, after 5 years ago, you know, to now, why is Rask still in Boston? You know, you got these guys, these young guys, these, you know, veteran guys that have come together so well over the season, and we come to this, you know, look, we're getting outplayed by Freddie Anderson. That's just a fact. Okay, we're you know, these guys are beating up on us. You got Pasternak's been locked down. They're playing phenomenal hockey against us, and we're crapping the bed. But I mean, like I said, I just can't understand why we're still letting these games go because of Tuukka Rask.
So I don't think it's because of Tuukka Rask, but once again, your goalie's not the story. Tuukka Rask wasn't the story last night, but was Freddie Anderson?
Yes.
So once again, the other goalie's the story. And once again, when I ask you, what goalie's influencing the other team more? It's not even close. You watched the Bruins last night? All that extra passing and the dangling and the stupid dipsy-do they were doing? That's all because Anderson is influencing them. They're trying to figure out how to beat the guy because he's made so many big saves and come up with so many spectacular sort of diving stops that he's now in their head and they're overpassing and over-dangling and over all this stuff. Anderson has affected the way the Bruins are playing. Has Rask affected the Maple Leafs?
No, not particularly.
No. And this is why like the Tuukka defenders always point to the numbers. Right now, Freddie Anderson has a .909 save percentage this series, and Tuukka Rask has a .909 save percentage. So you'd say it's exactly even. To which, even if it is exactly even, I'd say, then why are we paying Tuukka Rask $7 million a year? And this is what I said before. Like, I would trade Rask just for Joe Average. You could get the same thing out of Freddie Anderson or Antti Niemi that you can get out of Tuukka Rask. Okay? So, like, if they're the same guy, then what's this? What's all the hoopla over Tuukka Rask if he's just Freddie Anderson? But even if you take that out, who's made more timely saves at bigger moments?
Oh, Anderson has.
I mean, it's not even close, is it? It's not. I mean, Tuukka did it for you in one game. Other than that, Anderson's done it now in two. And, again, last night, you know, Rick Nash, early in the first period, huge blocker save. Backus on that deflection where he reaches back and hits it with his paddle. Another diving sort of paddle save. The guy never gives up on the play, which is a big thing from him. I mean, how many of those did he make? Nash again on the backhand coming out. He went post to post on Krejci late in the third period. This sort of big game-altering save. And you can just tell the way the Bruins are playing that the guy's in his head. So now we're in another series where I wouldn't blame Rask, but I'd also say the other guy's been much more of an influence. So how many times are we going to go through that before you say, what's the point of paying that guy if the other goalie's usually the difference maker? I mean, I think at some point you are going to have to ask that question. The last 20 elimination games in the playoffs, the Bruins have won just 6. Behind Tuukka Rask is what I'm saying. In playing in front of Tuukka Rask since 2010, in elimination games in the playoffs, with meaning either side has a chance to move on, money's on the table kind of games, the Bruins are 6-14, and he has a .280 goals against and an .884 save percentage, and that .884 blows. Blows. Last night, I wouldn't blame him, but the other guy was better, and I do think Rask let him down in the second period. I thought that second period sucked. I thought that game-tying goal was a joke, and it started with him. Bad clear, and then an awful rebound. and he took a bad angle on the Marner goal. He kept you in it in the third. I mean, he was good. But at that point, it feels a little too late, Murray.
Yeah, but just overall, it's just how frustrating. I mean, you're up 3-1 in this series. Close it out. And even salt in the wound for me last night is that choking dog franchise that is the Capitals that's down 0-2 to the Columbus Blue Jackets. They find a way to close it out, and you can't. Oh, please. I can't believe we're at this thing tomorrow night. I got a pit in my stomach already.
You should.
Oh, yeah, no. It'll be brutal. I mean, you know how those games are.
They're not fun.
No.
There's nothing fun about a Game 7. No. Don't let anyone fool you. It's the worst.
Everything is fun about it.
You sit down on your sofa, and you could have 100 beers and a box of raisins, and you are not going to be able to get up and go crap or go take a leak because you are going to be so stopped up it isn't even funny.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.